From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
35, 31 and 49 meters.
Stubborn and erratic, Jose moves on, but some islands are still not in the clear. Guyana and Cuba look to strengthen their ties, and weeks after Floyd, the Bahamas seeks to restore its picture postcard image. I'm Jessica Robertson, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Tropical storm Jose may not be packing heavy winds, but many islanders are continuing to bear the brunt of its torrential rains. Throughout the day, Jose has been dumping showers on a number of islands throughout the Lesser Antilles. Although it was a hurricane when it brushed past the northeastern Caribbean, a downgraded tropical storm Jose is beginning to resemble Mitch, whose floods and not its winds caused the greatest damage in Central America last year. In St. Martin, the tail end of the storm lingers and nearly a foot of rain has fallen. Mike Jarvis reports from Betty's estate, which is virtually underwater.
Heavy downpours in the aftermath of Hurricane Jose have practically paralyzed the island. As I speak with you, I'm completely blocked in at my home where the road in front of my house has been transformed into a raging river. This situation is quite common throughout the island today, where incessant and at times torrential rainfall has made most of the main roads impassable. It's estimated that some 11.4 inches of rain fell in the 24-hour period ending at 8 o'clock this morning, and the Met Office is forecasting another 6 to 10 inches in the next 24 hours. The Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Dennis Richardson, has issued a directive that drivers stay off the roads due to what he described as the life-threatening situation and hampering of work by crews of the Public Works Department. A curfew in place during the passage of Hurricane Jose was lifted at 4 p.m. Wednesday, but the return to normality expected today has been virtually washed away. Several homes have been flooded out, and government offices and businesses remained closed. The airport, which opened Wednesday, has not done any business, as airlines have again had to suspend operations. Most of their passengers are unable to make it to the airport due to the bad road conditions. More rain is forecast, and another weather system is reported to be 2 to 3 days away. This is Mike Jarvis in Dot St. Martin for BBC Caribbean Report.
Meanwhile, in the last few hours, Antigua's government has declared that island open for business, following a direct hit by Hurricane Jose. Minister of Tourism Molwyn Joseph toured Antigua's hotels and tourist attractions today and reported that all but two resorts are fully operational. In a short while, we will hear from Orrin Gordon in Antigua, but as Wycliffe Richardson in Anguilla reports, Hurricane Jose is still dumping rain on that island, too.
The rains, which started overnight, have continued throughout the day, dumping as much as 8 inches and causing localized flooding in some low-lying areas. Commercial banks, as well as government departments, reopened, and so too the airport, accommodating flights from Antigua, which itself was affected by Hurricane Jose. American Eagle, which planned to put in additional flights today to San Juan, Puerto Rico, had to cancel them in the end due to the adverse weather conditions and the failure of the non-directional beacon, a radio navigational aid into Walbleck Airport. The rains also hampered access to the airport terminal building. This means that a number of tourists bound for the United States who could not leave the island before the hurricane will have to spend at least one more night in Anguilla. The planning department has confirmed severe beach erosion, particularly in the southern end and eastern portions of the island. There has, however, been a bright side for residents as work crews from the electricity company braved the heavy rains to restore power to the entire island late last night. Wycliffe Richardson in the Valley for BBC Caribbean Report.
The BBC's Orrin Gordon was in neighboring Antigua when Hurricane Jose blew through. Although the storm did not cause significant structural damage, the heavy rains and gusty winds did take their toll, with one life being lost and dozens of families being left homeless. Antigua depends heavily on its tourist trade, and there were reports of coastal erosion. Well, earlier today I spoke with Orrin and asked him just how badly the beaches were damaged.
The word from the south of the island is that they were hit much harder by Hurricane Jose, and the damage there is slightly more extensive, but I haven't been to the southern part of the island, and I couldn't really verify that. But the damage, at least in the northern part of the island, seems very slight.
So has the cleanup campaign begun there?
Yes, the cleanup has begun in earnest. In fact, the cleanup started several days ago. What Hurricane Jose did was to tear the branches from trees, and there's lots of shrubbery and bush and branches of trees scattered all over the place. Here and there, a few trees have been toppled, and they've broken down fences. That aspect of the cleanup campaign has begun. The part of the campaign that is concerned with restoring power to the island, that has also started.
It sounds like a mess, but is it business as usual, or has tourism been seriously affected there?
It depends on who you talk to. The Prime Minister gave the air, or exuded the air, of things being nearly back to normal, if not quite back to normal. The flights are arriving, he said. The airport is open, and that is certainly true. And the damage to the hotels has been minimal. But I have spoken to a few people who are associated with the hotel industry, and they're saying that there is more to it than perhaps meets the eye. Certainly there's been a lot of water damage. Rooms have been flooded, and a few of the hotels have had their roofs blown off. But I think the larger picture is that most of the island's hotels stood up very well to Hurricane Jose. And what effect it has had on tourism is, I think, only going to become apparent over the next few days.
Orin Gordon reporting from Antigua. Guyana and Cuba are to strengthen relations between them. The announcement was made this morning at the end of a meeting of the Guyana-Cuba Joint Commission held every 2 years. With the details of the agreement, here's Colin Smith in Georgetown.
One of the main areas of cooperation between Guyana and Cuba is in the health sector. For many years, Cuba has provided a number of doctors and other medical personnel who have played a pivotal role in Guyana's health sector. This morning, Cuba's Deputy Minister for Foreign Investment and Economic Cooperation, Rodrigo Malmierca Diaz, announced that under the new agreement, which the two countries signed this morning, the number of Cuban medical personnel working in Guyana will be doubled. He also announced that cooperation between the two countries will be expanded to the fields of agriculture and construction. Speaking at the signing ceremony, Guyana's Foreign Minister, Mr. Clement Rohi, said the deepening of relations between Guyana and Cuba was an expression of a desire throughout the Caribbean region.
And so Guyana, by signing this investment and promotion treaty with Cuba, is by that very act contributing to CARICOM's desire to develop relations with Cuba in the promotion of investment in the Caribbean and in Cuba as well. We feel as part and parcel of the CARICOM family, it behoves us to be part and parcel of this collective endeavor.
The agreement on the promotion and protection of investment was described as a key ingredient in the development of bilateral relations. Deputy Minister Diaz said it will give a stimulus to the business communities in both countries to develop bilateral trade and investment. Asked if Guyana was not concerned about strengthening its relations with Cuba at a time when the U.S. was maintaining its isolationist stance towards that country, Minister Rohi said Guyana needs as much assistance as it can get, and whenever it can get that assistance on favorable conditions and terms, it would not walk away. Colin Smith in Georgetown, Guyana for BBC Caribbean Report.
As the date for the next round of meetings on the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas draws closer, Caribbean countries are being urged to take a more integrated approach to the discussions. Jamaica's ambassador to the United States, Richard Bernal, recently represented CARICOM countries at an FTAA vice ministerial meeting, that in advance of the main meeting scheduled for Toronto from November 1st. Ambassador Bernal spoke with Keystone Graves about what came up in this meeting and preparations for the big one next month.
The meeting focused on the following. One, finalizing the ministerial declaration. Two, discussing whether to announce the commencement of negotiations starting after the November meeting. And thirdly, looking at what the content of those negotiations should be. Including in the issues related to content was, of course, the perennial concern of smaller economies. Here, we insisted on having language which will ensure that issues of smaller economies will be treated in all of the negotiating groups, as well as in the consultative group on smaller economies.
The upcoming FTAA conference in Toronto next week, what are the issues at stake there?
The main issue is that the ministers should decide on commencing the negotiations and to set a deadline for the completion of what we call bracketed drafts, which is each negotiating group would seek to have a draft agreement ready for its particular topic. It would have brackets, meaning that it would not be a document which enjoys complete consensus, but would at least indicate some areas where there's agreement and note the areas where there is continuing disagreement.
Richard Bernal speaking to Keith Stone Graves. In New York, the internal affairs detective accused of mishandling the initial report that a Haitian immigrant had been tortured by police has been suspended for 30 days without pay. Gary Alfred had been manning the Internal Affairs Bureau hotline in August 1997 when a nurse at Coney Island Hospital reported an attack on Abner Nguema. The Haitian national had been arrested outside a nightclub and later taken to hospital with injuries suffered at the police station. Detective Alfred did not log the call, and an investigation was not launched for another 36 hours. Two other officers are awaiting sentencing, one who sodomized Mr. Nguema with a broken broom handle, and another who restrained him during the assault. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. And finally, while the northeastern Caribbean is feeling the effects of Hurricane Jose, the Bahamas is still recovering from its battering by Hurricane Floyd last month. The Eye of Floyd passed directly over a number of the outer islands, including Abaco, San Salvador, Eleuthera, and Grand Bahama. The 155-mile-an-hour winds literally swept away some of the island's finest beaches. The government has now put plans in place to restore them. But even before the work begins, concerns are being raised about the threat that human interference could have on the natural habitat. Emma Joseph has that story.
Angostura made the pink gin famous, but the Bahamas is also very well known for something pink, but you really shouldn't drink it. Those pink sand beaches on Harbour Island attract well over 3 million tourists every year. But then Floyd, the most potent hurricane this season, wreaked havoc on the island chain. Colin Higgs is the Undersecretary at the Bahamas Environment, Science and Technology Commission.
There's been substantial erosion on the windward coast in Eleuthera and Harbour Island, which is a premier tourist destination, the beach, which is a famous beach for its pink sand. The dunes were eroded about 20 feet, and you now have sheer cliffs of 15 to 20 feet along the three-mile stretch of beach.
The extent of the damage in dollar value still cannot be substantiated, but a government-appointed team of consultants and coastal engineers are assessing the damage. They will then make recommendations on how best to replenish the beach and its dunes. But restoration by man without damaging the environment or the dynamic of the beaches themselves is by many accounts a very difficult proposition. It's a problem that Colin Higgs is all too aware of.
We don't want to cause any long-term or accelerated beach erosion because of our activities to try to restore the dunes to their original state. But at the same time, those dunes also protect the buildings and just beyond the dune ridge. So there are circumstances that you need to restore the dunes where there is substantial damage now that threatens buildings or hotels.
The priority is to restore areas that are inhabited and that attract tourists. But those parts of the coastline that are not occupied by residences or hotels will be allowed to recover by natural means.
That was Emma Joseph wrapping up this edition of BBC Caribbean Report. Just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
Join us on Monday for our next morning programs. I'm Jessica Robertson saying goodbye from London.